Thank you. Good morning. I'm really excited to be with you at River Church this morning and excited to be in Maidenhead. This is where I was actually born and I lived in Cookham in White Ladies Lane, where you live, until I was five. So it's kind of like I've come full circle. We moved to Devon when I was five. So it's nice to be back at this end of the country and with you this morning. If you've got Bibles with you and you want to follow the reading in your Bible, then feel free to grab that now. And turn to Luke 10 and verse 25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and then put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." "Which of these do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." I wonder if I was going to go around and ask everybody, what is the most terrifying, difficult and dangerous journey you've ever been on? I wonder what you would tell me. And we might have all sorts of different answers from the congregation here this morning. You might start it by saying, "I thought it was going to be fine. I just thought it was going to be a really uneventful journey." Or maybe you thought, "Oh, right from the start, I knew it was a bad idea. And why on earth did I set off on this journey? Why did I go at that time of day? Why did I go on my own? Why did I go with this group of people?" Oh, for me, I was 17 years old and I was on a geography college field trip to Morocco. And that included a journey by camel into the Sahara Desert. And as well as that being quite an uncomfortable way to travel, I don't know if you've ever been on a camel, it's not comfy. Our halfway stop, which was a stay overnight in the desert, by the morning had become a crime scene, as we discovered one by one that we'd had all of our money stolen. Suddenly, being a student with having a nice sleepover in a lovely Bedouin-style tent transformed into an isolated kind of place to be in the middle of a harsh desert where there were thieves lurking behind every palm tree. Those thieves who had crept around our sleeping bodies, they'd rifled through our bags and into our purses. And on that day, I realised that when you go into the desert, the only danger isn't just sunstroke, but a whole bunch of other different things. Even if we've never taken a trip like that, or even if we haven't had friends that have that same kind of story, I think we often have a good idea of places that are dangerous for us to travel to. We might not want to walk alone in certain parts of our hometowns. I don't know if that's the case here in Maidenhead. Maybe if we think about some of the bigger cities in the UK or even far-flung countries. I'm sure if you think of Rio de Janeiro, you would think of the street crime for which the city is famed. 2 of my colleagues were held up by gunpoint there until they handed over their wallets, and they were just in an area that was kind of safe for tourists. Just in the same way, the crowd that were listening to Jesus knew the context into which he'd placed his lone traveller, making the journey from Jericho, from Jerusalem down to Jericho. And we can see a nice picture here. There we go. Jerusalem's Jericho. It's a winding 17-mile road from Jerusalem to Jericho with a 3,000-foot descent down from Jerusalem. And it was a road that had seen a lot of action, and it was known for its crime and its violence, and it earned itself the name the Way of Blood. So when Jesus said, a man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, everybody listening probably wasn't very surprised when he then said, and he fell into the hands of robbers. The traveller in the story was obviously carrying enough with him to become a victim of robbery. He had something worth taking. But it was also a vicious and a brutal attack. Rather than just taking the money and run, his assailants strip him and beat him, leaving him for dead. And that's what he must have looked like when his first two potential rescuers come across him, dead or at least very nearly. So our first two people that come along, the priest and the Levite, so in our modern terms, this would have been the pastor of the church and the worship leader. Sorry, Kerry. So these would have been the people for the Jewish people that they would have looked up to as an example of how to live their lives, the people that set the standards for them. They would have been considered holy people, the people that loved God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength, just as we heard that expert in the law say. But they see the traveller beaten and bloody, and they pass by on the other side. And there could have been all sorts of reasons for their action. For example, if the traveller was dead and they came into contact with the body, they would then be ceremonially unclean for 7 days. And we can see that in Numbers 19, verse 11, if you want to check that out. Which means that they would miss their duties at the temple for the following week. So that wouldn't just mess up their day by having to take care of somebody on the side of the road, but it means it messes up their whole week as they go forward, as they can't do the things they normally would do. Maybe they were also considering the risks. If someone's been beaten up and robbed on the side of the road, that means there are criminals around. They would have known the Jericho Road. They would have known the risks to take. And that's quite scary. I wouldn't want to hang around if I knew there were active criminals kind of lurking nearby. But what if this traveller was actually in on it? Perhaps he was a decoy. Maybe it was an ambush waiting to happen. And I expect at this point the crowd might have been considering these things, listening, and they might have thought that that behaviour, just to pass by, was actually quite reasonable, rational and understandable, because maybe they would do the same. But whatever they were thinking, I'm sure that what Jesus throws into the story next totally grabs their attention as he starts to introduce the hero as none other than a Samaritan. Despised by Jews socially, politically, and religiously, a Samaritan would be the last person on earth that a Jew would put into the heroic role of a story. Now, I'm sure that we probably don't want to say that we despise anybody. I was trying to think what this might look like in our kind of modern setting. If Jesus was telling this story to us here this morning, perhaps the Samaritan might come close to maybe an ideology that we despise. If we think of perhaps a Nazi or a member of Islamic State, these are regimes that we look to and think are totally wrong and evil. So it would be quite shocking to champion somebody as a neighbour and what a neighbour looks like by putting a Samaritan in that kind of role. But it's the Samaritan that takes pity on the traveller and risks his own safety. It's him that bandages up the wounds and pours on oil and wine to soothe and clean. It's him who gives up the opportunity to ride his own donkey and puts the traveller on the seat instead, and takes him to the inn, safe from the perils of the road, to rest and recuperate, and the Samaritan that covers the cost of caring for the invalid. It's the Samaritan's actions that Jesus uses to answer the questions that have been posed by this expert in the law. He's asked, what do I have to do to get eternal life? And Jesus gives him the opportunity to answer his own questions. How do you read the law? And he says, love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul and strength, and love your neighbour as yourself. But it's the second part that he gets stuck on. It's that neighbour part that he wants some more clarification on. He wants to check out what his neighbourly expectations are, as though that maybe they're a separate kind of action from loving God. He was potentially trying to put some limits on what his neighbourly liability might be. Perhaps we can just have friends and family that we're neighbours to, maybe colleagues, some extended relatives or those that we worship with. But through the telling of the Good Samaritan, Jesus widens out his perceptions and his perspective, taking them beyond his own circle, even his own community, and turning his idea of what a neighbour looks like upside down. Through the actions of the priest and the Levite, Jesus challenged the religious thinking of the day that being ceremonially clean and tidy was more important than showing compassion. And we see this throughout the Bible. When you look at the prophets in the Old Testament, who time and again, people like Amos and Micah, spoke on behalf of God and said, I'm just really tired of your songs and your offerings, and I'm tired of your festivals because you've forgotten how to love the poor and you've forgotten how to be just. And that's what I require of you, to act justly, to love mercy and to walk humbly with me. Jesus also cuts down the idea that compassion is the exclusive realm of the pious and the religious, showing us that even those that we might not consider to be kind of in the high stakes of compassion are able to reach out and help somebody in need. Which kind of says to us, if we're people that love God, and if this is the overflow of our love for God, then how much more can we be a neighbour, and how much more should we be a neighbour? But I think it also shows us that anyone, absolutely anybody, can be a neighbour, and whoever you are and whatever your situation and your background and your experience, you can still reach out to those around you. I think Jesus also demonstrates to us that being a neighbour is not kind of a fuzzy feeling or a kind of warm glow, maybe when you see an advert on the TV asking you to sponsor a child or whatever it might be, and you kind of feel all kind of sad and warm inside. But that it's an actual action. Compassion is an action that we take. And it might start with that feeling, but it has to go forward into some activity. And sometimes that can be, that will involve taking a risk. The road to Jericho was a dangerous place. It might be giving up your time and messing up your routine. It might require your money and your energy. And the way of compassion can be really costly, but that's what it is to love God and to be like him, the God who was fueled with compassion and took the most costly action in all of history to show us his love poured out on the cross. The Samaritan was a neighbour to the traveller, and we're told to go and do likewise. We're called to step out on the road to Jericho and be a neighbour to whoever we find beaten up along the roadside. Now, the road to Jericho, that way of blood, was a great example for that crowd that were listening to Jesus, because they knew it and they understood it, and it made sense to them. But for us here this morning, for you as River Church, in 2015, what does the road to Jericho look like? And what does the traveller look like? I think if we look around us, it's not too hard to spot the steep and winding road that is fraught with danger. Here in Maidenhead, for example, it could probably be seen in the 354 food cupboards that were empty this month, which led 354 families to go to Maidenhead Food Share for a food parcel so that they could eat. And globally, it can be seen in statistics like 1 in 8 people go to bed hungry every night. 1 in 10 people don't have access to clean drinking water. And every minute that ticks by, a child will die because of the result of dirty drinking water. And that's what the road to Jericho looks like in our world today. In Matabeleland South in Zimbabwe, you'll find a concentration of those 1 in 10 people that don't have clean water to drink and find it difficult for that to get hold of that basic necessity on a daily basis. Water, which is so essential for our bodies, that helps us to function and to survive, but also can be the difference between starving and being able to feed your family, the difference between eating and sending your children to school. This photograph here is of a lady called Zazeni, and she lives in this arid region of Matabeleland South, where water sources are really scarce. And dwindling surface dams, which would be the place where people would gather water, are shared with animals, and they're teeming with bacteria. And it's not surprising that in countries like Zimbabwe and much of sub-Saharan Africa, diarrhea is one of the biggest killers of children. That's one of the many challenges that Zazeni and her husband Jabalisa and their four children face. And as recently as 2012, the couple were surviving on just one meal a day and sometimes going without, sometimes having to make the decision about whether they would have a meal to eat or whether their children would, often giving up their chance to have something so that their children would survive. The changing weather patterns in the region they live in and the increasingly dry weather makes it harder and harder to produce a crop. So feeding your family becomes more and more difficult. And that means that not only can you not feed your family, but you don't have anything extra to sell. So that means you don't have some of the extra luxuries that you might be able to enjoy, like oil for cooking with. But it also means you can't afford to send your children to school. And that was the case for Zazeni and Jabalisa. Their children missing out on an education, missing out on becoming literate and numerate, being able to go forward and lead productive lives, not being trapped in a cycle of poverty. And that's what the road to Jericho looks like in Matabeleland. People living in desperate and dire poverty with just about enough to survive and keep their bodies going, but not too far from starvation and the consequences. This road to Jericho is a place of really, really fragile hope. And people like Zazeni and Jabalisa and their children are pretty much being beaten up by their circumstances and left on the side of the road. Zazeni and Jabalisa live 7,500 miles away from us here this morning in Maidenhead. I Googled that for the accuracy. But they are your neighbours, those that we are called to love as ourselves. And I'm convinced that we care about ourselves enough to make sure that we and our families have enough water to drink, that we have enough food to eat every day. And if we're to love Zazeni and Jabalisa, shouldn't we want that for them as well? Shouldn't we want them to have clean water to drink and just as much conviction over making that happen? Now, I get really, really excited when I see Christians grabbing this vision and embracing those who are left beaten and bruised by the roadside. And I see it all the time. I had the privilege of visiting loads of churches in Berkshire as part of my job, and that's how I met Kerry. Going around just kind of seeing what people are up to and partnering with them through Christian Aid. And I've lost count of the number of churches and church leaders that I've met who've told me about their involvement in food banks, in setting up youth groups for disenfranchised young people, providing debt counselling for those that are in financial crisis. It's just amazing and wonderful, and I'm humbled by it, by people reaching out in compassion to their local communities. And I see it in churches who not only look to their neighbours right on their doorstep, but they're also looking into the wider world, and they're partnering with organisations like Christian Aid to alleviate the suffering of poor communities. They're helping people along the road and dusting them off and giving them an opportunity to recover and to go on to thrive. And the good news is that that is what has happened for Jabalisa and Zazeni. Having spent years seeing the lands around them deteriorate, becoming drier and more desolate, a good Samaritan in the shape of Christian Aid's partner, the Dabane Trust, has drawn alongside their community. In that dry land, they're helping people to access water, and it's bringing about the most amazing transformation and changes. And they're getting this water from dry riverbeds, which I find fascinating. Because if you look at that, there's not much water there. But deep below all of that sand in that dry riverbed is water captured between these grains of sand. And using kind of some innovative techniques, they've made a sand dam. And they collect the sand as it kind of moves via the water kind of within it. into a sand reservoir. And from that reservoir, they're able to pump water up. And the Dabani Trust work with Jabalisa and Zazeni's community to give them the experience and the tools that they need to be able to do that so that they can pump water right out of the ground. And because that water has come through all of that sand, it's filtered, and it's some of the cleanest water that you will ever find. And so Zeni says that this means that now that her family don't have to access water from the open water sources, which they've been sharing with the animals. And she says, our water is now clean because it's filtered by the pumps and it's not contaminated. Even the cattle have a water trough and they're no longer affected by worms. More than simply bringing clean water to and better health to the community and their livestock, the Dabani Trust have also helped the community to install an irrigation system from that pump, which goes into a market garden, and they've allotted little sections of that garden to different families in the community and teaching them how to grow different crops throughout the year. So even in the really long dry seasons, there are certain crops that can still thrive. So they've been given the skills and the knowledge to be able to farm in that way. And this means that families can feed themselves throughout the year. And Zazeni says, the problems that we had before are now reduced because of the garden. Every day we wake up to see our green garden instead of our old bush where our crops were wilting. And I love this bit. She says, we now eat every day at any time and we are always full. Zazeni and Jabalisa, because they have these extra crops, they were able to sell some of them. The Dabani Trust have helped to set up a processing centre for the community so that they can process some of the crops that they are producing and be able to sell them on. So that means that not only do they have food to eat every day, clean water to drink, but they also have that extra bit of income for luxuries like buying cooking utensils or buying oil to cook their food in. But it also means that they have enough money to send their children to school. So it's a huge, huge change from being beaten up on the roadside to going on to thrive. And all of that was possible because Christians in the UK are living out those two commandments, those two things that bring eternal life, loving God and loving their neighbour as themselves. And they've made the decision to plant their feet on the road to Jericho. And each year, thousands of Jesus followers give their time, their energy to give to poor communities, give them the chance to recover from the affliction of poverty, loving their neighbour as themselves. And I think that stepping on the road to Jericho could possibly be one of the most exciting and wonderful and humbling God-filled journeys that we could ever take. I'm excited about it. I get excited about being part of this kind of thing happening. And there are so many ways to take the journey. And it could be as simple as reaching out to somebody on the fringes, somebody that's sitting on the side that is lonely, and giving them a kind word. It could be as simple as when you're doing your shopping every week, putting in an extra item for Maidenhead Food Share. I know that on their website, they've got a whole list of like which items are good to buy. And it could be using your mobile phone to give £3, the price of a coffee, to fund a water project like this one. I should have showed you that already. That's Zazeni with her crop. You can help to make that happen. So I want to encourage you this morning to start the journey on the road to Jericho. And if you've been walking on that road for a bit longer, then I really encourage you to take a few more steps. And I'd love you to get involved in Coffee for Water, and Kerry's going to be talking to you about that in the next few weeks. For every step you take on the road to Jericho, the footprint that you leave behind is clean water for communities like Zazeni and loads of other wonderful transformational things.